Hello, and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is State Representative-elect Mary Gonzalez. If you're listening today, I congratulate you on being an even bigger political nerd than me. And now, here's your host.
Thank you, Representative-elect. This is Reeve Hamilton with the last new original sort of standard format Tribcast for the year of 2012.
What are you doing?
What's happening?
Is that a fancy way of saying that next week is going to be recycled?
Are you and Todd having a rave next week? What are you doing?
Next year's going to be special, but we can't tell you how.
Special, like you fell on your head?
What does that mean? You're going to have to wait.
It's a gift, like you fell on your head.
It's going to be the trib monologue.
That would be a gift.
Joining me is editor in chief and CEO Evan Smith.
Hey.
Executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And editor Emily Ramshaw.
Let's just all agree that if you run for the legislature, you're obviously a bigger political nerd than anybody else.
I think that's probably right.
Well, I don't know. Some of those people don't seem to be that into it, honestly.
Or that nerdy, for that matter. Yeah. Right? I don't think Dan Patrick is very nerdy. Do you think he's a nerd?
What?
Yeah, he's a nerd. Yeah,
of course he's a nerd.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, he texts Evan Smith. He's a nerd.
Oh, well, half of them do that.
Is that the standard?
If you text Evan Smith, no.
You are a nerd.
A lot of us have to, not by choice.
Forcible.
That's not a bad standard, actually.
his daughter got married this weekend at the Capitol. Did you know that?
Then we're getting too into the weeds on Dan Patrick's personal
life. Well, let's congratulate the young bride. The young bride of Dan Patrick.
The young bride.
The young daughter who is now the young bride. There was nothing offensive about that.
How far into deepest, darkest Texas did we go for that one?
Yeah, he was acting like we were talking about the West Texas polygamists.
Somehow we have to transition to that, to gun violence.
Way to bring the room down, Reeve.
Yeah, geez.
We should start with the latest news. Obviously, people are still pretty shaken from the Connecticut shootings. But that hasn't stopped a number of Texas politicians from proposing responses. Mostly, at least the most high-profile ones have been Louie Gohmert and Jerry Patterson have both said that maybe these teachers should have some automatic guns in their classrooms.
Well, this is a standard fight now. Every time there is an incident like this, you get a bunch of people coming forward saying this is because we don't have sufficient gun control, and another group coming forward and saying this is because we don't have sufficient self-defense. It's not about gun control. Now we've got mental health conversation going on.
I was going to say, party three, we don't have enough mental health in
right.
this country.
The question that I have in this one, and I haven't seen anything really that knocks this off high center. All these groups seem pretty locked in on their arguments. You know, these guys are anti-gun, these guys are pro-gun, these guys, you know, and it's just hard to see where this conversation moves from here other than the fact that it's come back onto the front page again.
Well, the president's going to do something, I think.
He telegraphed that pretty strongly in his speech on Sunday night.
And there are members of the U.S. Congress on both sides, House and Senate, who have been historically pretty sympathetic to the Second Amendment and to the gun lobby, who have lifetime NRA ratings of A.
Right.
Mark Warner, Joe Manchin, two Democrats from Virginia and West Virginia, respectively, who've both said, yeah, we got to do something. Joe Scarborough this morning on Morning Joe. He's another lifetime A-rated NRA person. We got to do something about this.
He basically disavowed his position. He said my position has changed,
that everything's different now.
Right. I mean, but I think it's been interesting to sort of watch where the, you know, Texas politicos land. I mean, you know, Greg Abbott's, I think, first or second statement around this has been calling a press conference to talk about school safety plans. You know, it isn't mentioning anything about guns. I mean, I think, you know, you've heard it from some folks. You've heard it from Jerry Patterson, who you always hear from on this kind of issue. But I think, you know, more important is where you're hearing sort of, you know, the sort of moderate establishment, quote unquote, establishment Republicans, where's the motivation or where's the push going to be? Are they going to do something this session?
Have you heard anybody say anything in the last 72 hours about legislation that might result from this in the direction of more gun control? I have not.
The only thing
I've heard is people saying something needs to be done. But the question is sort of to Emily's point, somebody has to move. Somebody has to change a position or say, I never considered this circumstance. This is an epiphany of some kind, or I'm going to change my mind in particular circumstances because of this.
You mean somebody other than Joe Scarborough?
It's such a well-settled issue that most people in politics, particularly in places like Texas, have a well-settled position. I'm either for this or I'm against it, or I'm for more mental health spending or I'm against. And the question, if you're going to get some kind of a new law out of this, is who has moved to a position they weren't in before.
Right, and Jeff Wentworth is no longer in the Senate, and he's the one who you could always count on to file this kind of stuff, right?
Well, he did campus carry,
but I mean, I think session. You know, the sort of rumblings have been what can you do in a classroom setting? Now, Morgan Smith was just telling me that there are some school districts. Apparently, some school districts get to make up their own rules on this. Apparently, there's a school district on the Texas-Oklahoma border where teachers are permitted to carry guns. So, you know, maybe that's not a legislative thing. I don't know. There's still a lot to learn.
Well, it does seem like people are still trying to decide what the debate even is. Is right. it gun control? Should that be priority? Is it mental health? Is it?
Well, I think it's going to be muddy until they get some kind of feeling, some kind of new sounding from the public on this thing. But they're scared to death to regulate guns if the people voting in their primaries are people that don't want them to regulate guns.
But they're also scared to death to increase funding for mental health because they don't want to, you know, break their budget. Right. I mean, look at what's happened over the last couple of sessions. I mean, I think it would be it's going to be fascinating to see if anybody will actually push for, you know, better, greater mental health spending in Texas.
Right. There's some conversation on the national level about the gun show exemption. But I think they're kind of nibbling around the edges. There's a really interesting long article in the current Atlantic, on whether so many guns have been sold, to about 300 million guns in private possession now in the United States, whether so many guns have been sold that the gun access argument is largely over, and that now this is about what about the people who have the guns? How do we regulate
that's,
it? At this
that,
point?
That's it. So much of the reporting early on this was faulty, it turns out.
Right.
So I don't want to say this is the case because I've heard it, because it may not be the case. But it's been said that the guns that were used in the commission of this crime were acquired legally.
Oh, yeah. The mom was a gun enthusiast.
But they weren't used by the person that acquired them legally.
But they were acquired legally. So it wasn't as if somehow the rigor of the background check rule or whatever else would have prevented this.
Right.
We got to increase background checks. Well, that wouldn't have prevented this necessarily.
Right.
And kind of on and on. I actually wonder if what some people who are generally pro-gun but are really repulsed by this, as everybody ought to be, have said is there's no reason for people to need access to assault weapons.
Well, and that's where it sounds like
why don't we go there, and why don't we also go on or go after the multiple ammo clips, these magazines that allow people, and this was the case after the Gabby Gifford shooting, is the case now.
Do incredible damage with just a couple tiny pulls
of
the trigger.
The average hunter or the average person looking to defend his home can have access to the weapons that they need without needing to have access to these weapons.
Well, you could question if anyone needs to have access to these.
Well, but I mean, let's leave aside, you know, for military use. I mean, there are going to be uses for these weapons, but in the context of a conversation like this, whether there's agreement or not about the Second Amendment, whether there's agreement or not about whether there should be more gun control in a broad sense, in the narrow sense, there seems to be agreement around the idea that certain weapons.
I don't think that's right.
You don't think that there's...
I don't think that's right. I think there's a reason...
There's more agreement.
There might be more, but you're back to the point of asking people to, did what happened on Friday in Connecticut change your position? There's a reason the assault weapons ban was failed to be renewed, because the politics aren't there to do it.
I wonder if the politics are not there after Friday.
Well,
I wonder.
You know, somebody's going to have to change their position in order for that to be the conversation.
Yeah. Well, a few people... It seems like at least a couple people have. I thought it was interesting to see the Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch is tweeting that we need to get rid of assault weapons, basically.
Right.
And we all know how powerful and influential he is.
Well,
he owns some
influential networks.
I'm still mad at Morgan Freeman's fake comments on Twitter or on Facebook. Didn't you see this?
You're mad at him, or you're mad at his fake comments?
Well,
the comments he didn't issue.
Someone pretended to be Morgan Freeman on Facebook, and you know, went all about how this was really the media's fault, all of it.
Do you not buy that argument?
That it's the media's fault? Absolutely not. Did people not want to know this had happened? Because we all could have just stayed
home. I think the media was not their finest moment in terms of reporting of this afterwards, but the details were all coming fast and
furious. Disasters always do this.
Right.
Hurricanes do this. Tornadoes do this. You get sketchy information from people who have a little bit of information and extrapolate from it. Police reports are, you know, not because the police are screwing up. The initial police reports are usually wrong.
Yeah.
You know, there's usually like a high end, you know, this many people were in trouble in this tornado and this many people were killed, and then they'll back a number off or add to it. All of that stuff was sort of normal in these things. The place where the media kind of got loose, and the media does this, I mean, is on the instant psychological
analysis. That's them, not us, right? The media.
Well,
that's them,
this really wasn't our story. I mean, but had we been, you know, reporting this by the minute. You know, there's this urge to say, here's a little piece, snippet of information from a former elementary school classmate of the alleged shooter. Therefore, we can assume this about the shooter. You know, nobody's qualified to do that.
I get that. And like sticking microphones in little kids' faces, I totally understand that kind of stuff is over the top. But what was so frustrating to me was watching people saying, oh, you know, all the early reports in the media, they were just too quick to report. They were all wrong. Well, I mean, the media was getting its information from law enforcement. And so, okay, law enforcement maybe didn't have a clear picture, but to blame the media for, you know, spreading the law enforcement message is just ridiculous.
I'm not too flipped out about what the press did. I just don't think it was the very best that the press has to offer. It just was sort of standard
stuff. It just sucks for Ryan Lanza.
The suggestion that somehow the mom worked at the school. Well, no, she didn't.
Right. Or that the principal had let the guy in.
There was an altercation the day before with the four grown-ups who were shot and the guy.
The first day reporting at Luby's when George Hennard went through the window was the same kind of thing. These kinds of things are mayhem and chaos, and a lot of the initial information is just wrong.
But I think a big part...
It's not just media.
But the difference today is that it gets spread much more like wildfire.
Social media, it all spreads so fast.
No, but a big part of the criticism of the media is not necessarily that they're, you know, relaying incorrect information from the police as much as it is just, you know, part of the reason someone might think to do this is so that they get their name on every front page, and then when someone does it, newspapers, doing their jobs, it's one of those things where news organizations can be doing their jobs and still contributing to the problem, because this guy does get glorified. He's on every blog, every front page in the country. And I don't know how you account for that, but
to blame that on the media for doing its job and reporting the news is just totally asinine to me. I mean, before that conversation happens, the national conversation about why people aren't spending more money on mental health needs to happen. Because if you're not, you know, treating people who need help, I mean, you know, what the hell is changing how the news is reported going to do? I mean, people are going to lose it.
Well, I agree, but I think when we're talking about sort of, you can't just sort of get rid of the media's responsibility on everything. It's like Jamie Foxx was going after his own movie, saying that, you know, maybe the violence in movies does contribute to something. Not necessarily get rid of all violence, but just admit that there's something in there that does something to society.
Sure. I mean, we've heard about copycat crimes forever. Copycat crimes happen because people find out, you know, through the media, I'm assuming, about these crimes.
Do you really want to argue that the media naming the shooter is contributing to the problem?
No, I'm not saying naming the shooter. I just, you know, there's this question about, there was some newspaper that said, you know, from now on, like, these sorts of things are going to sort of, they'll go below the fold. Or just, it's a design issue more than...
Didn't the Chicago Sun-Times
be careful not to glorify
that?
Stuff.
Right, they weren't going to put the names of shooters above the fold.
It's not going to go on like the cover of the New York Post with a jokey headline.
This is rearranging the deck chairs. I'm sorry.
Right. The thing where the media screwed up is a persistent screw up when you get into a crisis and mayhem situation is that a lot of the information is initially wrong. You see it in war reporting. Mm-hmm. You see it in crime reporting. It happens a lot. But it also happens, I do think the media ought to do a better job with that, but, you know, it's the nature of the information in a situation like that. The cops have the same kind of information. The fire people have the same kind of information. You know, this happened on 9/11. It's, you know, these things happen. It's just a maelstrom of good and bad information, and it's hard to sort it out.
Right.
If the feds pass an assault weapons ban, does that become the new EPA in terms of our fight against them? And their
well, you know, the problem
priorities?
With this from a Second Amendment standpoint
weekend.
Is that if you regulate this a little bit, you regulate it at all. And it's, you know, if you're absolutely in favor of the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or whatever amendment you happen to love, if you're absolutely in favor of it, then any abridgment is an abridgment. You know, you're letting them in. Well, maybe that sounds like a good idea, but that'll lead to something that's not a good idea. So you shouldn't allow it in at all. And there are some other problems here. It's not a single source problem. It's not just about the availability of guns. It's about the availability of guns and the mental health of the people who have access to those guns and maybe security at schools. There's a bunch of stuff here to talk about.
Right. Right. I mean, I was thinking this weekend that it's really going to, if such a ban does pass, boy, that will just give more ammunition to Greg Abbott to fight the feds. We will spend so much money here in Texas filing lawsuit after lawsuit over this.
Right.
So of course, the some of the lawmakers behind that get to hang out in their well-secured Capitol.
Well, you know, this is a particular gripe of mine, is that the Capitol is surrounded by police officers 24 hours a day at every door. They put in gun monitors. They put in truncheons at all the exits and entrances so that you can't drive cars in, so that they protect themselves. And I don't mind them protecting themselves, but I do wonder why they protect themselves so much better than they protect everybody else.
It's cheaper.
It's a hell of a lot cheaper.
It's it's an offense, I think.
You're offended by it?
I am. I just think that, you know, if you're going to make, if you're going to say we need safe places just for us, that's not really your job. You're running a government for everybody. You're doing the things that the community can't do for itself. Mm-hmm. That's why we formed a government. So take care of everybody.
Shouldn't the 5.8 million people who are uninsured have access to the same level of health care that state legislators have?
Well, I mean, if you can make the argument.
If you extend the argument that way?
But just on this, I mean, you know, sort of, you know, not everybody agrees that the state has an obligation to do health care, but everybody does sort of agree that public safety is kind of a basic fundamental piece of government, and it's interesting that the level of public safety is so much better for those guys.
But the public safety argument is along a continuum, because where public safety diminishes as a value, often liberty, in the broad sense in which we've now come to define it, rises.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So this is being posed by people on the pro-Second Amendment side as an issue of liberty, not an issue of mental health, not an issue of gun violence, an issue of liberty, and that we have to make a last stand for liberty.
But I think so much of the conversation, I haven't seen much liberty talk in the last couple of days. I mean, I feel like the traffic I really saw, you know, from the gun rights side was really, you know, we're having a conversation that we shouldn't be having. Mental health is the conversation, which I actually thought was interesting because, you know, a lot of those folks are the same folks who supported, you know, pretty sweeping budget cuts.
Well, let's see what happens at appropriations time if they're still so interested in mental health. It may just be a way to distract the conversation from the issue that they don't want to talk about.
Well, and the other question with these things, and this is a perennial conversation when there's something like this.
Yeah.
How long is this of interest?
Right.
Is this going to persist, or are we going to talk about it for 3 or 4 days and then nobody's going to talk about it anymore, and, you know, Aurora will be months behind us and nobody will be talking about movie theaters?
Well, we're getting to a point where it seems like give it 3 or 4 days, there'll be another one to talk
about.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like every week there's something else like this to talk about. I mean, I do feel...
There was a shooting at a movie theater in San Antonio yesterday.
Yeah. And not, you know, obviously on anything on this scale, but still, you know, a life is a life. And when you're talking about kids, if the conversation doesn't linger, you know, if these kids' names aren't brought up in every debate, you know, I think this one, it's crossed a new line.
Right, of course. I'm not sure that I'd rather see 20 people who are grown-ups at an Orange Julius in the Barton Creek Mall or in, you know, North Park Center. I would be just as concerned about that.
I mean,
of course, but we all can admit that it doesn't get the same kind of attention. It doesn't resonate.
You know, this is far more horrifying. I mean, these are the most vulnerable among us, and it's, you know, it's outrageous.
It's just a question of what people are prepared to do. I mean, that really is what it comes down to.
Right. And has this changed anybody's mind in a way that will actually result in a serious conversation about changing the law in a way that might prevent something like this from happening again?
I think we've really moved away from an idea that was foundational for so many years as I watched the world, that there's a greater good. We really have moved away in this country from the idea that there's a greater good on a whole variety of subjects.
Right.
People are not willing to say, I'm going to put myself second, and I'm going to put the greater good first. And that extends to a lot of different things. I think it's sad.
But if you believe that liberty is for the greater good, I mean, you can slice this, you know, apple any way. I mean, anything can be for the greater good. You know, for some people, it would be a major sacrifice to have to give up their weapons. You know, they can flip that around and say, you know, this is an assault on the liberty of every American.
But sometimes you can, someone has to be a grown-up and just say that, you know, that doesn't make any sense. The idea that you have, like, you know, 4 automatic weapons at your disposal to do whatever.
I think this is probably going to come down to who has access and what's the condition of the people who have access. The guns are out there. And the argument about, you know, if you're going to regulate any gun, you're going to regulate all guns. I think that's kind of firmly entrenched at the moment.
You believe that?
In American politics.
But do you believe it personally?
You know, if it's going to be an amendment if the Second Amendment is read correctly to protect your right to have a gun, it doesn't say in there which gun.
But not every gun is legal. I mean,
what they've sort of satisfied is that they've drawn a line sort of where it is at the moment. You know, are they going to move the line back? And if they move the line back, is there any way to gather up all the guns they sold so far?
I guess the question is, can you move the line back? Can you move the line back and have it not be an assault? Unfortunate choice of words on the Second Amendment.
I don't think you could politically make that argument go. I think
Chuck Schumer tried to make that argument. He said the left needs to acknowledge that there is a Second Amendment that gives people a right to bear arms, and then other people need to acknowledge that the right to bear arms does not necessarily apply to everything, and that amendments change. I mean, the definition of things change over time.
Right.
That seems like that's where, if there's a middle ground to be found, it's somewhere in there. I don't know if they can find it. But can we get to this idea of a serious conversation and switch topics a little bit and check in on the speaker's race?
Have a non-serious conversation.
I thought you wanted to have a serious conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Strauss says that he's ready to have a serious conversation in the next legislative session.
Emily or Ross, has David Simpson moved the needle 1 inch from last week to this week in terms of making his candidacy plausible?
No, and in fact, over the last couple of days, he put out a letter saying, you know, this isn't about my politics. You know, they sort of got into this argument about, he found himself in an argument about if it went his way, then this is the politics of the right wing and the politics of the left wing trying to get together against the politics of the middle, right? Can you get a David Simpson and a Trey Martinez Fisher to agree on the same candidate against somebody who's more moderate? And I think they saw that was a loser, so he put out a letter basically saying, this isn't about politics, this is about the argument, and everybody having a chance to make their argument. And so now he's trying to sell the idea that Joe Strauss isn't allowing debate to fairly take place that might otherwise take place.
You believe that?
I don't know that the members believe that. I don't think it matters what I believe. But thanks for asking.
It is the holiday season. Trying to be considerate.
The question is whether any of the members believe that. Do the members think that they're under a thumb somewhere? And I don't have that sense of it.
I really don't have that sense.
There's some people who are kind of ticked off. The Democrats are mad because this is basically a vestige of the 2010 Republican sweep. The Democrats help elect Joe Strauss at a time when there's 76 Republicans, 74 Democrats. The voters intervene and wipe out a bunch of those Democrats and make it 102 eventually to 48, and the Democrats are whining that they're getting their butts kicked. Well, you're getting your butts kicked because you got shellacked at the November elections in 2010, and you didn't much improve your situation in 2012.
Your argument is that Strauss's treatment of the Democrats is not the cause of their problems, it's the emblem of their problems.
Well, I think that Strauss is reflecting the makeup of the House, and the makeup of the House is two Republicans for every Democrat. So shouldn't be surprising that he's been a remarkably Republican speaker.
Going into this next session, you know, he gave this press conference where he said, you know, he's really ready to start talking about the serious issues, which you can probably assume might mean he's not that enthusiastic about the TSA pat-down stuff, because he was not really supportive of that discussion last time.
He was asked about
pretty open about
fetal
not
pain,
being
and he was
into
like,
fetal pain, which Perry is already out front on.
Not
so
my
is this
big
setting
priority.
Up for an interesting tension between Perry and the governor?
Perry and the governor?
The speaker. Yeah.
Well, we don't know yet. No. Yeah, Perry and the speaker.
I mean, you heard the speaker saying, you know, we're going to focus on water. We're going to focus on the economy. We're going to focus on infrastructure. And, you know, then pretty...
What's conspiring against the speaker here is not just that the governor and the lieutenant governor want to run to the right. Part of what's conspiring against the speaker here is that because of the school finance lawsuit, and because that sort of puts everything... on hold in big budget items. You know, we don't know how much money we can spend on water. We don't know how much money we can spend on transportation because we don't know what the courts are going to tell us to do with schools. There's so many reasons not to do the big budget things that Strauss is left with this situation where they may not get to the big items he wants to get to, not because of the politics, but because of the courts. We may have to wait for school finance to come down to see how much money, if any, is available for water, or how much money, if any, is available for transportation.
So another session where anything without a fiscal note is okay, but anything with a fiscal note's a problem because we don't want to spend any of this money.
You give them a reason to say, I'd love to do this.
What's
the
fiscal note
on
fetal pain?
Right. I really want to do that. Well, and then so you clear the field for all these other issues. So you've got room for all of the social politics and all of the other things that are going on. Some of that stuff's important. Some of it's, you know, I mean, and you know, the importance of it kind of depends probably on what your position on it is.
But I think if Strauss is willing to sacrifice himself, there's an interesting fight, as a spectator, I can say this, there'd be an interesting fight to watch between the assertion of the old-style republicanism against the assertion of the new-style republicanism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about this is a two-party state, it can fairly be said that the two parties are Joe Strauss Republicans and Michael Sullivan Republicans. Democrats are the third party in a two-party state, right? That Strauss Republicans versus Sullivan Republicans, if you buy that premise, would be an interesting cage match. If only the Strauss side, not embodied by him personally, but that side in a broader sense, was willing to actually wage the fight. So far, they've been mostly willing to fold their cards against a lot of these incursions from their right.
Give an what's an example of folding their cards?
Well, I think on a lot of the social issue stuff that happened in the last session,
like,
I suspect
the family planning cuts.
I suspect
example.
That temperamentally, if you mm-hmm. injected these guys with truth serum, they would not all be uniformly for this to the degree that they're for it.
Education cuts, family planning cuts. Mm-hmm.
But are there constituents? You know, this is what Ross actually reminded me of this when I made a similar point at a live podcast not too long ago. I mean, you know, the question of somebody who maybe feels like they have to vote for family planning cuts because they're worried about, you know, a primary attack. Are they worried about a primary attack because they fear that their constituents are less aligned with them than with a potential challenger?
Or are they afraid their constituents aren't going to vote at all? I mean, this is the argument that the Republican primary and the Democratic primary have become elections where only the most fervent people vote, the most Democratic Democrats and the most Republican Republicans. And it's not that, you know, you think you would lose a November election based on your position, but you might not survive March in your own party.
Right.
And you know, so I think both sides of the Republican Party that you're talking about, Evan, are looking for issues where they can run in primaries now. So that they can pop up and say, well, you know, my opponent and I are both Republicans, but he, she, it doesn't believe as we do on whatever issue it is. I think they're looking for wedge issues. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see a lot of those in the first two or three months of this session.
And where the Democrats could be relevant in a session in which they've got 55 in the House and 12 in the Senate, which is to say not enough to do anything on their own and not enough to prevent anything on their own numerically. It's a math problem, as Bill Clinton would say, right? Where they can be interesting as a contributor to this conversation is if the what we used to call the moderates before that became a cuss word, if they joined forces with the Democrats, they would have, in theory, the numbers to either do stuff or not do stuff.
But
they
not joined, in primary elections.
Yeah,
but the problem is that this is that March is November.
Right. If you could wave a wand, if the moderate Republicans could wave a wand and get the people who vote Republican in November but who don't vote in March
to vote,
would suddenly vote in March, then they would be talking about the kind of politics you're talking about. But the problem is that the most conservative Republicans have a greater hold on the primary.
Most, you know, there's a long Nate Blakeslee profile of Michael Quinn Sullivan in the New Texas Monthly that
great
I've had the benefit of seeing. It's a really fantastic piece.
Yes, David Simpson retweeted it this morning.
Well, and we published an excerpt of it this morning, and I would encourage everybody to go to the Texas Monthly website for the time that it's free, at least, and read it.
Especially if they go via our excerpt.
Yes,
they
could start with us, please.
But I thought that the key quote, which we made part of our headline, is Michael Sullivan asserting our side is winning. It is hard to argue with that fact. You might not like it if you're a moderate Republican or a Democrat. You might not like the way he approaches the task of playing politics or fighting with people in his own party in primaries and other times. But you got to accept the fact, I think, as a fact, that his side is winning tactically.
But the Democrats won a lot of elections that were on the bubble in the last election cycle, which is not even the opposite side.
You mean nationally?
No, here in Texas.
Well, what Sullivan's looking at is the number of chairs that they knocked off, the number of people who were in the original Strauss 11 that have either left or gotten knocked off.
The Wendy Davis victory is an anomaly that I would suggest to you is not a disproving of this theory I've just laid out. I think the Joe Moody thing may be more about the drawing of the district than the historical nature of that district.
Right.
DeMargo ain't a Michael Quinn Sullivan Republican either, by the way.
Right. The Sullivan losses were people like Wayne Christian. You know, there were a couple of conservatives along the way that got knocked off. But, you know, I'm not sure I would say they're winning. I think that they're certainly contending. And
he's the guy
that can blow his horn at the House and make them all stampede to the other side of the corral. I mean, he's that guy. You know, they may not like him, but he's the one that they're all talking about. Where, you know, I've got to take this vote. I'm not sure where I ought to be on this. Where's Sullivan? You know, that's a relatively powerful position to be in. It's clearly patterned, at least sort of, you know, the template here is Grover Norquist. And Norquist has been powerful with the national Republicans. And, you know, I think to that extent that works.
But the debate for the Strauss guys, and not just Strauss personally or Strauss's folks, but that universe of Republicans, is how much oxygen do you give the other side? I thought it was very interesting that Strauss last week, by name, called out the agenda-wise guys.
Well, he was asked about them by name.
But you know, but he could have chosen not to respond.
He's great at deferring a comment.
He could have not mentioned them by name. He made a wiseacre crack about them that then got repeated by
a
number of us.
They made a wiseacre crack back.
And they made a wiseacre crack back.
But they never blogged about it.
I keep looking for them. Yeah, I know, yeah. Right, to do that. But it elevates...
Ridiculed. I'll ridicule their misspellings after it's riddled with it.
You did it
and they'll ridicule you back. You shouldn't go there. Don't go there. This is what happens. God punishes
it's
you.
It's like quicksand.
And by God, you mean Michael Quintal?
with two L's. No, I think that it was actually interesting. He gave them oxygen. He basically elevated them to be at his level.
See if you buy this theory. If Joe Strauss badly defeats David Simpson in the speaker's race, does that reflect on the power of the people behind Simpson, the third parties, the Michael Quinn Sullivans and those? Does it knock him down a notch?
It doesn't, because Simpson was never their guy. Simpson is not willing to embrace party orthodoxy enough. He's not an absolutist. They may like the fact that he's quite conservative, but he's also his own guy.
So is there still another guy coming? Or gal?
If you don't see a weakness on the Strauss side, even if you want to knock him off, there's no reason to stick your head out.
I wondered if it would be Phil King, except now those guys have all attacked Phil King. So
right. Well, let's along those lines. Let's quickly say, anyone have any predictions for?
Well, you should ask specific questions.
2013,
like a game show speed round.
Who will be the speaker?
Strauss.
How many special sessions will we have?
Well, hold on. Are you gonna let Emily answer?
You say three.
Three.
What? Why three? I want to know your...
Until when?
Emily's budget
can
just
blew I go
up.
On vacation? Yeah.
My vacation plans just...
The school finance digs in. I mean, you know, they... I'm biased on this. When I first came down here, they had
won
six.
18 special sessions.
Well, luckily, right. Morgan will only have to work, not the rest of us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's down to, yeah, Morgan and Amon. It's just budget and schools, right?
What's the sleeper issue for the session?
He's just going to ask you.
These are not so to Ross. You can answer them if you have an answer. In-state tuition?
In-state tuition.
That's what I was going to say, but I was asking the question.
Well, why don't you ask it to yourself, since you already had a pre-canned answer? I didn't know we were doing this.
Anyone have
around.
Any resolutions? Evan, what's New your
Year's
resolution
resolutions?
For 2013?
Better podcast?
Don't count on it.
How hard is that?
I'm working on it. Reeve, cover your ears. I actually think that I think you're going to hear more about transportation this session than we think. You know, the rough order of issues, I think going into the session, you'd think would be public and higher ed, healthcare, water, and maybe transportation as a weak fifth. I think transportation is going to come roaring to the front of the line or near the front of the line during the session.
At 85 miles per hour.
Absolutely.
At 85 miles an hour. That's a great freeway, I got to say. You know, you get to barbecue so fast. It's fantastic.
You get to barbecue, you mean Lockhart?
Yeah, exactly right. You go from Austin to Lockhart and get your barbecue at 85 miles an hour. It's fantastic.
All right, well, we got to cut out and do that now.
I just hope that the lawmakers continue to talk to us in 2013.
So more on that later.
Do you predict that they will?
I predict it could be icy for a little while.
All right, so... On that note, sort of a downer to go into the new year with, but hey, if you'd like to keep talking to us, questions or comments can be sent to tribcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Emily, Ross, and our producer, Todd, this is Reed. Thanks for listening.
All right, Toddcast, I haven't eaten.